This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Two Florida restaurants are among the elite group to have received the Wine Spectator magazine's Grand Award for Stellar Wine Lists. And we have both Burns Steakhouse in Tampa and Blue Provence in Naples on the second half of our show. We'll have tips for navigating giant wine lists and an insider's look at how the evolving wine market has changed some of the most important sellers in the industry. But first, the Teacher and Principal School Report is a collection of surveys and data for more than 4,700 public school educators across the country. It identifies key areas of focus for our nation's teachers, from reading to commitment to their careers. The survey also has teachers identify barriers to a good education, and here in Florida, those hurdles can include a wide array of factors, everything from the easy-to-quantify out-of-pocket costs for classroom materials to factors that are harder to track, like family engagement and time spent reading outside of school. Here to help us break down the nationwide survey and what Florida teachers say about their classrooms is Michael Hagan. He has worked as a teacher, principal, administrator, and school superintendent in school districts over his 20-year career in cities like New Orleans and St. Louis, and he now serves as the chief academic officer for Scholastic Education. Michael, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, Julie. Good afternoon.
If you have a question or a comment, feel free to call in and ask our experts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So Michael Hagan with Scholastic Education, the name of your organization might ring a bell for parents through the work that Scholastic does to bring books and other education materials into classrooms. But here we have this nationwide survey called the Teacher and Principal Report. How long have you been collecting this data?
The report came out last year, so the data was collected during that year to get everything from almost 5,000 teachers and principals from around the country.
That is a lot of research. But what is the goal in presenting this kind of data on a national and state-by-state basis?
Well, as you know, Scholastic has just a long history of listening to our educators and sharing their stories. So we really wanted to look at a report that would support the great work that our educators are doing around the country. And as you can see, the great work and more difficult work that was happening in Florida, we know that literacy is the foundation for all learning, and we've discovered that through the years.
Yeah, so what were some of the key findings of this teacher and principal school report?
For me, being a former teacher and an administrator, I wasn't shocked to hear the amount of money that teachers and principals spend out of pocket to support some of those barriers that our families are facing. But it was surprising to hear, for example, for a state like Florida, where on the national average, there's teacher salary pay is $10,000 less than the rest of the country, but our Florida educators actually spend more out of pocket than the rest of the country, and they're paid less because they really want to support those families that are coming to them each and every day and what that looks like to make sure that they're achieving as they should be.
That really does highlight the dedication of the teachers that we have in the state of Florida. They're making, on average, $10,000 less than other states, but they're spending more out of pocket to augment what they have in the classroom for their students.
Absolutely. And then they also, what is interesting for me as well was, in Florida, they recognize that we do need to have a great school-to-home connection, and we need support in doing that. And they recognize that, and they try to do what they can. But for me, that says that we, as working with the community, we have to make sure that we reach out to communities and make sure they're helping us do what we need to do, given the strains on our budgets in the schools in Florida.
Yeah. One part of the report looks at education equity, and it highlights barriers in education. It's a broad topic. But what do Florida teachers highlight as some of those barriers?
Well, the Florida teachers, they were experiencing family and personal crisis. That was, you know, the highest percentage for them. And they're also sharing that a lot of their families come to school living in poverty. And we also noticed that they were talking about their access to the internet and access to, as you know, we use the web and internet for various sources. So the greater access we have, the greater opportunities we have, the closer opportunity gap. So in Florida, they're noticing that their families have less of that access.
Well, some of the numbers for Florida were really striking out of that report. It said that 4 out of 5 students report to their teachers that they are experiencing a family or personal crisis. Nearly 3 out of every 4 students comes to school hungry. 2 out of every 3 students are homeless or in temporary housing. These numbers are pretty severe. How does Florida compare to other states as far as how the students are reporting?
Unfortunately, some of those numbers are higher for the state of Florida. And also as well as, you know, the number of students, almost 8 out of 10 are English language learners. And so for the state of Florida, it creates even more challenges. But for the teachers and the principals to recognize this and bring this out, we were fortunate enough to have enough report outs from the state of Florida where we were able to do an individualized report for Florida alone so that we can highlight some of these areas of concern. For me, it even stood out the number of homeless and temporary housing, you know, 6 out of every 10. 62% of the teachers recognize this. So it's just amazing what they have to go up against compared to the rest of the country. It's still a little high.
Well, it's definitely hard to thrive when you're coming to school hungry and you're in temporary housing. That's difficult. But then when you add on to that, the English is a second language component. How can families and communities get engaged in helping these kids?
Well, it's interesting. I like the word that you use, engage. Oftentimes, we as educators, we would do family involvement, and we'll share, well, you know, I noticed that certain families really don't care, and they didn't come out. And we actually found out through other research and working with families around the country that oftentimes when you're working with students or families where English isn't the first language, they're afraid to come out. And sometimes there may be undocumented families that don't want to come out as well, but they're 100% behind their students when it comes to education, and they're pushing them. So we have to learn how do we engage those families to come out and not just get them involved and do parent-teacher conferences, but literally engage them. And something that we do at Scholastic, we have something called Family Literacy Nights. We did a study in South Carolina where we had 29 schools, and we did 29 family literacy nights, and we did a survey after that. So what we did is we pushed into the schools, and we worked with the teachers on how to engage the families. We modeled for them read alouds. We modeled for them questions they can ask if the parent or the family member were to have their child come home, how to engage them and what they were doing in school. And then those teachers share that with the families. And then we surveyed the families who came out, and 100% of the families felt that those events were engaging and they learned from them. So families are asking for, can we have support and what it looks like to work with the school and how does that work? So those family literacy nights that we do with Scholastic are really critical in supporting those school-to-family connections.
And I know that there is a literacy program, at least in Collier County, and it's probably happening also in Lee County, I would imagine. But they're trying to encourage English as a second language adults to bring their kids to class and trying to get the families to all learn as one.
And I agree with that. I encourage, and I share this a lot. So we have families that, you know, they bring books home, the students are bringing the books home, and they're in English, and then the families at home may not read English. I encourage if you have books that are in the language that the family speaks, bring those home as well and do both. And so the family members are learning as well as the students alongside them. It enhances their reading skills in the language that they know, and it gives them a thirst and a hunger to do it in English as well. So they're just increasing their skills all around.
Yeah, it's also just tough to find the time, too, also to do that for families that are already struggling to get by.
It is. It is very tough. But what we're finding is when we create more opportunities, when we partner with our communities, when our local libraries, when we partner with our city halls and our mayor's offices around reading initiatives and getting our city to read as a whole and finding time to do that, we find that those are the best methods in supporting literacy.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about education in Florida and a new report on what teachers and principals in Florida say should be priorities. Give us a call with your comments or questions at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Your report takes in data from teachers and principals. Do you see any big differences in what teachers want in their classrooms and what principals want?
There are not any great differences, but yes, oftentimes the differences will come around the professional learning or the development they would like to have. When teachers are in their classroom, it's their classroom. They're focused on what happens within their space. If I'm a third grade teacher and I have my third grade class, that's what I'm looking at. But principals have to look at all of the teachers from pre-K to sixth grade if they have a pre-K to six, and every teacher's need and every teacher's concern. So it could be a little slightly different on that. But we found that principals actually, you know, their salaries are higher than teachers, but they actually spent more than teachers did out of pocket, because they recognize the needs of the students as well, especially in Florida. Not only did they do that, but they recognized also that their families were coming to schools experiencing personal crisis. They recognized that their families were living in poverty. They recognized that they need health services. So as a principal, they're obligated to try to partner with other agencies to support them. As a teacher, they need to know what's going to happen for their classroom with their students right away.
Mm-hmm. And this question might not be specific to Florida, but one broad area your report does cover is an educator's commitment to the profession. That type of out-of-pocket spending, does that come into consideration when you're looking at their commitment levels?
Well, you know, it was a separate question. We asked the educators, you know, why do you do this for the love of students? This is what gets you up every single day. And overwhelmingly, 98-99% of them said yes. Regardless of what they have to pay out of pocket, regardless of the lack of resources or not the best resources. And by the way, Florida pointed out, they're very good at knowing what effective resources are for the classroom, and they know what that looks like and what they want. But regardless if they have them or not, they enjoy what they do every single day when they come to work, and they know why they're doing it, for support of students and achievement.
So when teachers say they want motivational support and strategies that they can use with family and some data-based instruction, is that something then that Scholastic will try to incorporate in some of the materials that they have on offer?
We do. We like to what we call present comprehensive literacy. So we look at the balanced literacy approach around reading and writing, and making sure students and teachers work in small groups around guided reading and independent reading and integrated writing. So that's our balanced literacy approach. And then we have something where we have what I like to say, the three buckets, the second bucket of family and community engagement and learning supports. Scholastic, over 10 years ago, worked very closely with two professors from UCLA, Dr. Taylor and Dr. Ailman, around when families face these barriers to education, what are some of the supports we can put in place to support those educators to make sure they're reaching their goals. And so we call those learning supports. And so we work with schools around their literacy programs and put in place those learning supports. In the state of Alabama, we actually work with the entire state, every district in the school around learning supports. And then we do our family engagement. I spoke a little bit about that earlier, those literacy events that we have. We come out and actually work with the educators in the school and train them so that they can have it and use it year after year and semester after semester. So from balanced literacy to family community engagement to learning supports, all of that on top of professional development, that professional learning piece, always growing, always being the lead learners, always looking at how to use best practices and become highly effective.
Well, it's definitely an interesting and eye-opening study. Michael Hagan with Scholastic Education, thank you so much for joining us today and diving into that report. We're going to pivot our conversation now, but I want to thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having us.
And the full teacher and principal report is on our website, wgcunews.org. Just click on the Gulf Coast Live tab. So we're turning our conversation now to someone who's been working to address the education needs of students in our area for some time. Leonardo Garcia is the founder of the Multicultural Center of Southwest Florida. He's here to talk with us about his organization and their upcoming big backpack event on Sunday, July 30th at Paul Lawrence Dunbar Middle School in Fort Myers. Leonardo, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Well, thank you for having me here today.
First, give me a little background on the Multicultural Center. What does the center offer, and what role do you seek to fill when it comes to education in Southwest Florida?
The Multicultural Center primarily does the Big Backpack event every year. When I founded it, it was because of that need where we saw teachers spending a lot of money out of the pocket to help the students they serve. And I learned via a program that I participated as a leadership program through the Chamber of Southwest Florida. And we went to the schools, and when we talked to the teachers, they say, no way, you know, we need to, as a community, we need to come together and support the students and the teachers And that's how we started the Big Backpack event.
So every year, parents get the here's your school supply list. This is what you need to bring in addition to just bringing your child to school. Were kids, parents unable to provide that? And so that's what you're doing. Before, teachers would kind of fill those gaps, you were saying, but this is what the Big Backpack event is
exactly.
trying to do.
Yeah, we saw that. And, you know, as we like to say, we like to help the students start the school year with pride and self-confidence. Because if you go to schools and as a child, all the kids, if you don't have everything you need, you know, there's a
– Oh, kids are brutal.
Oh, yeah. And we want to avoid that. And for 18 years, we have served about 40,000 children Southwest Florida will go back to school with pride and self-confidence.
Well, you know how – remember how it felt when you went back to school in the fall and you had a crispy new notebook that nobody'd written in and brand new pens and pencils? It's a good feeling and it's kind of you know, starting fresh and new and clean going to school. It feels good.
Oh, yeah. It helps for the kids to stay in school and complete the school years they need to move on to a better life.
Yeah, that's kind of the only time of year that everybody's expected to have something brand crispy and new.
You exactly.
know? As the school year goes on, everything gets used up and everybody's kind of along the same path. But you have to have something new when you get there. So what is in these backpacks?
We have gathered the school supply list from the school district, and we buy all the school supplies that they require to take. And with the new backpack and what we do, we have a bunch of volunteers the day of the Big Backpack event, and we have little children, big children, adults helping us as volunteers. And they go through the line with the open backpack, and they go putting all the stuff they need. It's a beautiful day, and that when you go home that day, all you see the big smiles on the children.
Yeah, you're exhausted, but so happy.
Exhausted, but very happy.
Yeah. So do parents need to bring anything to take advantage of this? How do kids get involved, or how do they qualify?
When we started, the first year we asked for pre-registration, but we realized that was a challenge, was a problem. So we decided to leave it open. They show up there and with the children. That's the requirement. The children need to be present. And so they go, they – only that's what they need, just to show up with the parents, and we'll take them as we normally do, 2,000 backpacks and school supplies. And if we have more, we try to help, but that is the goal.
So generally you have about 2,000.
2,000, yeah. We already bought 2,000 for this year.
Do you have 2,000 kids show up, or what if you get 2,300?
Oh, yes. No. Well, in that case, we normally give out tickets. And if that's the situation, we take names and we try to call around to see if we can help those kids.
Try to help and get it accommodated.
Yeah.
Can people still make donations for this year's event?
Yes, they can. Yeah.
What kind of donations are you looking for? Do you want people to go out and buy the pencils or just do financial donations so you can buy a uniform?
Typically, when you buy in bulk quantity, you negotiate better.
Okay. So having funding helps.
Exactly. Yes.
Instead of
And volunteers. And usually we send out a school supply list. If they call way in advance, but like in 2 weeks, because we're talking about 2 weeks where we're going to have the event, is we need to make sure we have everything we need. And if you call, let's say, 3 months before, we send you the school list, the mm-hmm. school supply list. And it's because we need to know exactly what you're bringing before. That way we're not short of anything.
So at this point, is everything purchased already?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you have logistic issues trying to get things all in one space, or do you have it all there?
In Paul Dummer Middle School, we have everything right there.
So you got it?
Yeah, we got it.
Now the big thing is you need volunteers.
Volunteers.
Okay. And so how do people get involved if they do want to volunteer?
They have to go through the website, multiculturalcenter-org, and they go and they sign up. And we usually before, for many years, we did it at Harborside, but you know Harborside is under construction now, a new hotel. So we're moving into Paul Dummer Middle School. So it's going to be brand new to us, and so we don't know the challenges. I think we might need more volunteers because the space is more limited, and then we have the parking outside. We need a lot of volunteers.
All right. And we do have a link to that on our website at wgcunews.org. And we just talked about some of the biggest barriers that teachers and principals have identified in Florida's education system. And you're working with students and parents every day. Mm-hmm. What kind of barriers do you see locally?
Basically, what I see, and I used to run a volunteer program where we solve a lot of needy families and children, it's just the parents are not, many of the poor children, the parents are not educated. And especially with the Hispanic community, they don't speak the English. So helping them is a challenge. So if volunteers can help those families who, you know, with the English language skills, that would be wonderful.
Are you seeing fear with people not wanting to come forward or that are unable to get in for any type of assistance because they're afraid of immigration situations, any of that?
To our event, they all come. Mm-hmm. Because we also do like a multicultural festival during the event. We do haircuts, cutting. And but to all their agencies that they require to go, there's some kind of hesitant for people to go because of the atmosphere in the nation today.
Yeah, I can understand that. Do you have any kind of events or programs in which the parents can learn alongside their students? Are you trying to do that type of outreach as far as teaching English?
No, but I'm on the board of Amigo Center, which provide that kind of services. What we do, we refer them to Amigo Center, mm-hmm. which does an excellent job of serving the Hispanic and non-Hispanics with jobs, language skills, and all the immigration too. So that's what we do. We just facilitate that of information to the community.
Mm-hmm. So mainly you need volunteers for this particular day, but do you need volunteers year-round as well?
Yes. We need about 20 volunteers, what we call core volunteers, that help with the planning. We meet we start meeting in January through the time that we do the event. But we need that 20 volunteers that put the event together. And right now we maybe short about 7 volunteers.
You're short about 7?
Yeah. So okay. Anyone who would like to be part of the planning committee is welcome to call and join us.
You'll start planning for next year.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Well, this event is coming up on the 30th, correct?
Yeah, Sunday, July 30th.
All right. And we have links to that on our website as well. But we're going to have to leave it there for now. But I want to thank our guest, Leonardo Garcia, the founder of the Multicultural Center of Southwest Florida. Thanks for being here today and good luck with the big backpack event in about a week and a half, Sunday, July 30th at Paul Lawrence Dunbar Middle School in Fort Myers. Thanks so much.
Okay, gracias. Thank you.
Also visit WGCUnews.org and click on the Gulf Coast Live tab for links and more information on that. Coming up, winning a grand award from Wine Spectator means your wine list reads like a scholarly tome. The two Florida winners this year could be cataloged among the historical and international stacks. We'll talk with the creators of the wine list from Blue Provence and Burns Steakhouse next. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.